Now on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's time for the only area radio show devoted exclusively to football. That is to say, soccer.
Local, MLS, Premier League, and international.
It's Blokes on the Bench, and you can reach us at 434-284-9470 or at facebook.com/blokesonthebench. Now here's your host, Andy Richardson.
All right, guys, welcome along to another edition. We were off for a week, but things have really kicked off this weekend with the results. I think the competition is back on and open. So let's jump right into it. Liverpool versus Everton.
Merseyside.
Merseyside derby. Everton haven't won at Anfield since like 99, they said?
Something way too long ago, yeah.
Yeah, almost like 20 years. So no shocks at the result, really. I was a little disappointed in Everton because right before the international break, both of these teams were in top form. It's never going to be a good sign when probably the most, well, I'm going to say one of the top three strikers in the league at the moment in Romelu Lukaku doesn't even have one attempt at goal throughout the whole game. You're not really going to get, you know, you're not really going to get anything out of this game if that's the case. So, but Liverpool started really well. Typical high press. Mane with a pretty clever, some would say lucky finish. And then Pennington with his, I think that was his first goal, right?
Well, it's like first start, I believe.
Premier League.
For Everton.
Right. I think he played in the Cup a couple of times, right?
Perhaps,
it's maybe his first Premier League game,
yeah.
Not a bad way to...
But the first goal was on him. It went right through his legs. And if you saw right before that, he actually knocked over his teammate, I think it was Ashley Williams.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think Pennington had a great game, even though it's a goal to remember with the scoring in front of the Kop. Even the next goal, which I'm sure you're about to get to, which was fantastic. That right. was right in front of his face. Mm-hmm. Coutinho just put on a show yesterday.
I mean, that goal was just typical Coutinho as well.
Yeah, well, the thing is, as well, like, Everton just weren't up to it. They were half a yard too slow across the park, really. Some wild challenge, and that just showed with some of the wild challenges they were putting in, like especially Ross Barkley had one that he got away with, and then
against Lovren, that should have been a straight red,
and then picked up a booking for one on I think it was Emre Can or someone like that.
No, it was
on Emre Can. Yeah. That was over the top as well.
But the whole game, it seemed like Liverpool were in command. It never really seemed like
control,
Everton
yeah.
were gonna really a threat, even after they scored. Their response was so quick. They scored, I believe, in like less than 3 minutes right afterwards. It was, it was typical Liverpool, I thought. I thought they played really well.
You look at the start of probably about 5 minutes into the second half, when you have a striker like Romelu Lukaku just drifting out to the right-hand side because he's not getting any touches, he's not getting anything of the ball whatsoever, and picking it up out wide, and then, okay, so he picks it up out wide so he can get some touches, but who's your marksman then? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's no point in being all... It was bad all round from Everton, I thought. But credit where credit's due. Liverpool, like you said, the Coutinho goal. But we've said this for like three seasons. Like, Coutinho scores these wonder goals when people stand off him. You give him that kind of room and the ability he's got, he's going to punish you from that range.
And he almost scored right before that.
Yeah.
There was a great save by Robles and then a kind of clear off the line by Jagielka.
Yeah.
I mean, he also had the assist for the Origi goal where Robles was just flat-footed, which if you look at every single one of the goals that Liverpool scored,
he
doesn't make an attempt.
Yeah.
Makes you think twice about him. He had a couple great saves, but come on, at least go for the goal. I thought he could have got his fingers on one.
Yeah, you can say that. The first goal, when it comes through somebody's legs that quick, it's really hard to get down and...
But at least make an attempt, right?
Yeah, but sometimes, like, if you're just gonna make a token gesture at it just for the sake of I'd rather you just stay on your feet and just be like, you know what, good finish. Coutinho, one, he's getting nowhere near it. He could have pretty much been stood on that side inside the post.
And then on the third one, he was guessing that Origi was going to shoot to the left.
That happens when someone's clean through like that and their head's down, so you get no read on the eyes. Like you do pick your favorite side and just hope for the best. And unfortunately, he's just closed his foot on it, stuck it the other side. And like you said, I laughed at that because I was like, This keeper hasn't moved for one of these goals.
And Origi had just come on.
Yeah.
He'd been on just for a moment.
It was a wonder goal.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Came on for Coutinho, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't forget, guys, you're tuned in here to Blokes on the Bench on 94.7. You can get in contact with us 4342 at 49470. And you can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/blokesonthebench. Anything more about that game that you want to kind of
The only thing is that, yeah, Mane went off injured. Looked like a real nasty one, actually. He's just gone to try and close the ball down on a Leighton Baines clearance. And he's got his foot, like, caught underneath him.
Yeah.
It looks like his knee ligaments kind of extend. His ankle goes a weird way. It was nice to see him kind of be able to walk off the pitch.
And he collapsed when he was trying to come on. And it was clear that he was injured.
Right.
And, you know, that doesn't look like one that's like he'll be back in the midweek. Or even next week. I mean, that's a couple weeks at least.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of injuries, I know it's somewhat unrelated to the game, but it looks like Seamus Coleman's going to be out for Everton for a long time.
Yeah, that was
horrific. You were talking about it.
Or something crazy.
Horrific. Yeah, broke his tibia and his fibula in one reckless challenge from... And you know what? It's not... A lot of people have asked me, like, I've spoken to a few people and they've gone, oh, it's the worst challenge ever, da-da-da-da-da. It's not... Like, when you watch it, the ball bounces... And he's a fraction late. Is it reckless? Is he in control? Absolutely not. But he's not. And I think people who know, was it Taylor? Naylor. Taylor. He's not that kind of player.
But I think you have to be responsible for your actions. And FIFA is actually looking into giving him an extended celebration, or not celebration. Suspension. I mean, you think about it. Messi gets 4 games for yelling at the referee, cursing at him, essentially.
Yeah.
And the straight red usually gives someone 3. I mean, that doesn't seem fair. You're taking someone out of the game for a year.
We're going a little bit off topic here, but Argentina lost 2-0 in the World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, so they did.
They are struggling to even qualify at the moment. So that would be hilarious.
But I mean, they're still they're fifth right now, and even with fifth, there's a. There's like a playoff.
Right.
So, I mean, there's plenty of time for them to come back, but they're in significant trouble, and they didn't even start Aguero in that match, which is kind of weird. He wasn't even injured. Yeah.
All right, we do have to move on. Watford versus Sunderland. This was actually a pretty decent goal.
Yeah.
It was scrappy, right?
What's his face? It's the guy I don't like.
It was I've Britos. Said,
yeah. Yeah.
Britos had the goal.
Terrible defender. Like,
was it offside, though?
That's a good point. I mean, it looked like maybe the goalie's legs barely, maybe a shoelace perhaps kept him on. If anything, he probably, he could very well have been offsides. Yeah. But there are better chances in the game.
Pickford made some great saves.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, Sunderland have no chance of staying up. Zero chance whatsoever. Those are games that they have to win. And they've got they're going to struggle to keep hold of him when they go down along with a couple of other players. I think it's going to be tough. I don't think we'll see Sunderland back in the Premier League for a while.
Yeah, they're 8 points back of Swansea right now.
They just have no chance, mate. No chance.
The only thing that they have going for them is they have a game in hand.
Okay, but they've lost 5 on the bounce. And with, like, what, is it 8, 9 games to go? 8 games to go? You just can't.
Yeah, they look like they're going.
They're putting nothing together, and then we're obviously going to get onto like what Palace are doing, and Hull pulled it out. I mean, just massive. Those people are really fighting for it and getting something. I'm not seeing anything from Sunderland.
Yeah, Middlesbrough
really.
looks destined to go down as well. They just can't score. We'll get there as well.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on. Man United versus West Brom. Mm-hmm. Not really much to talk about apart from.
You like that Tony Pulisic, don't you?
Yeah.
What he does.
I've got a clip here I want to play. All right. So it's Mourinho being asked a question by a BBC reporter. And I basically
want.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the game wasn't. Nothing much going on. Rashford took a shot, free kick. Would have been awesome if it had gone in. Unlucky. Mickey did the same thing and missed from pretty much.
Yeah. Martial had a couple of good chances. Good header in the first half that he's squandered.
I just want to hear what you guys think of this, all right? Let's see if I can get it to play.
We saw you smiling with Tony Pulis at the end. Did you cancel each other out today?
I don't know what you mean. What do you mean by that?
Two teams very evenly balanced today?
You think so?
Well, I'm asking you.
You think so, really? You think that's a question?
No, I'm asking because you were smiling with him at the end. Was it an acknowledgement that
I'm
you'd balanced each other out?
Because he's my friend. No, I was not speaking about the game. Do you think the game was was like that?
I was asking because you were smiling with him.
I can smile if I lose, if I win, if I draw. There's nothing to do. You are asking a question about the game. You think the game was like you were saying?
No, that's not what I said. I didn't say what I think. I'm asking you what you think. I'm sorry. That's just what I'm asking.
I'm sorry to say, but it's a silly question.
Okay.
When a team crossed the midfield line once in 90 minutes, and the other team is for 90 minutes with the ball in the opponent half, trying, you are telling me that one team canceled the other one and each other? We didn't have to defend. We didn't defend. We had the ball all the time, and David De Gea was sleeping, and because he was sleeping, he made that funny thing. I was laughing with that funny thing because it's the only way to react to that.
Obviously, David De Gea was a pedestrian for much of the game. He probably got away with that.
So the first question doesn't have a...
The first question was not my opinion, Jose. Yeah. You can continue if you want, but that wasn't my opinion.
Yeah. All right. I don't know what to make of that, to be honest.
I mean, it's frustrating.
He's so feisty.
Yeah, but it is a stupid question. First of all, to be able to cancel each other out by kind of definition, especially in this game, it's somebody scores, somebody deserves to get level, and they get level. You cancel them out, both teams pretty much 50-50 in possession, pretty much 50-50 on chances created, shots on goal, that kind of thing. That's kind of cancel each other out. When you play, I think it was something ridiculous in like the first 30 minutes. Well, in the first 30 minutes, it was 78% to United. you know, it's just ridiculous.
75% for the game. Total shots, 18 for United, 3 for West Brom.
Yeah. I mean, it's not... Look, everyone knows that West Brom came there with a plan. Hopefully they could get a point, frustrate, and that's exactly what they did. United forwards, I think, were lackluster, to say the least.
I think you had too many players on the pitch that want to do the same thing.
Well, I don't know
I saw that lineup.
When you play at home against West Bromwich Albion, and I'm taking nothing away from West Bromwich Albion. They're pretty high up in the league. They're having a great year and all that. But you know that we're going to have the majority of the possession of the football. Why you play two holding midfielders is just beyond me. So that's my gripe about it. That's the perfect game, though. That's the perfect game to start Wayne Rooney. Like, that to me, that's the perfect game to start Wayne Rooney. Or play Fellaini higher up almost as a false number 10. And let Mkhitaryan and Jesse Lingard, like they like to do, like drift in and around him, because he's going to win so many of those balls in that pocket between midfield and the defenders. But when him and Michael Carrick are both, like, you know, negative side, if you like, of the opponent's midfield, it doesn't make any sense. So it was very easy for them to defend because their lines were always close together. There was nobody really drifting in between them because their midfield was actually so deep. Like Jose said, that, you know, it's kind of an understate, well, you know, over exaggeration that they crossed the middle of the field once in the second half. But, you know, the possession shows that thing. So I don't know why we didn't maybe start either put Fellaini in that false number 10 or... Sorry, yeah, Fellaini, that false number 10. Or start Wayne Rooney. We brought Wayne Rooney on with 20 minutes to go. He had 3 touches, gives away a free kick in the dying minutes, and gets booked. Did nothing. Absolutely nothing. So
it's used to coming off the bench. I mean, I feel like he's the kind of guy that needs to be starting. I'm with you on that comment.
But wouldn't you rather, when it's nil-nil, honestly, the way it's set up and everything, the way it was going, wouldn't you rather bring a Fellaini on with 20 minutes to go and stick him up front, right, than bring Wayne Rooney on, who's literally done nothing all year except one great free kick and surpassed the record, which is great and everything, but he's not your match winner anymore. And we're taking players like Mkhitaryan, who didn't have a great game, had a couple of chances, but he's somebody who can change a game.
Well, let me ask you this. So there was one part of the game with Mkhitaryan, and it looked as though it was arguably, debatably, a penalty. Do you know which play I'm talking about? Like, it looked like his legs were almost swept up from underneath.
Yeah, it's not a penalty.
That one wasn't. But then he had another chance later in the game where it was literally him one-on-one against the keeper.
Yeah.
I feel like we wouldn't be talking about Mourinho and tactics and all that if you'd won 1-0.
Yeah, just stick it in the net. I mean, it's the terrible. I think it was Dawson or McCauley, like, go to clear it, hit it straight at him, and he takes the heaviest touch I've ever seen in my life on the 18-yard box, and Ben Foster's able to come out and get a hand to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, a better first touch there, or even I feel like he could have almost hit it first time. Like, once it's bobbled, don't take the touch, just stick your laces through it. And then there was one, like you said, when he gets swept over, and then Fellaini hits one with... which should have been really kind of an open goal, but it hits Mickey on the rear end and goes wide. It's just, you know, we had chances, and we didn't take them. Like, Rashford had a decent effort with a free kick, decent effort from open play.
That was a great save. I mean, let's not take away anything from West Brom here. I think that they defended well. I mean, hey, you could argue the best chance of the game was when De Gea almost had a howler. He got saved by the post, the crossbar. I mean, the keeper's best friend.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of a disgrace, I thought, that's even something that he's going to, like, bobble. I mean, come on. He's supposed to be the number one in the world. Spain number one. I mean, come on.
It's hard. Like he said, though, he was asleep. Like, I'd have been half asleep, too, if I was playing in that game.
That was his only save.
I think he had six touches the entire game, David De Gea. And that includes, like, going to grab the ball for a goal kick, placing it down.
You know how many touches he's going to have next year?
Maybe readjusting it.
Zero.
No,
I don't think he's going.
He'll be there.
But we're gonna keep on talking about Mourinho here. So do you really? I mean, like, he's been getting everything right for the last 5 months, 4 months, something like that. So he gets this wrong. Maybe this game. Maybe you can argue his tactics. Hindsight's 20/20. All that. I mean, overall, I mean, you still gotta be satisfied where you are. And for the season.
Don't get me wrong. I'm really happy. My problem is that certain tweaks here and there in that midfield throughout the course of the entire season, I mean, that's our, 11th game that we've drawn this year? 12th, maybe?
Eighth at home.
You even convert half of those into wins. And let's not forget that I think four of those games of the eight that we've drawn, we've been winning at some point. Nobody comes to United when we go 1-0 up to end up turning it around and beating us. Like, it doesn't happen.
Not anymore.
Yeah, but so what I'm saying is if we could have converted at least half of those into wins where we are in winning positions, which is an extra 8 points, 4 games, 2 points drop, 8 points, like that puts us right into third straight away. I think actually level on points would be second with Spurs. It's just things like that.
That is
frustrating, yeah? That's the frustrating part. But that's not including, like, games like yesterday, 78%. And we, you know, against Hull City and Burnley, where it finished 0-0, again, 78%, 70% possession.
But, I mean, how much would you say that having Ibrahimovic out today really hurt you?
It was, yesterday. But, yeah, massive, because, you know, it's not the same. Like, we know that West Brom, okay, first and foremost, fantastic on set pieces, defending them and when they're attacking set pieces, because they have height.
And they showed this against Arsenal.
They showed yesterday against United, because even putting Fellaini in decent spots, don't get me wrong, our final ball in the final third yesterday was, in my opinion, just shocking, horrendous. Ashley Young couldn't beat the first man. You had Martial sticking out for a goal kick every time he pretty much put a cross in. It's poor, and you're not going to have people like Jesse Lingard arriving at the back post and out jumping Gareth McCourt. It's not going to happen. So I do feel like we missed Ibra in that instance for that aerial presence in the box.
I was actually really intrigued. I wasn't here last week, but I listened to the show. You guys had a debate about Griezmann or Lukaku, who would be the better fit at United.
It was 2 weeks ago.
In the last show. At first I was surprised by you saying that, hey, Lukaku is who I'd rather have over Griezmann. But, you know, in today's game, if you had Lukaku, you probably would have won.
Right. I agree. All right, guys, the time is now 20 past the hour. We'll be right back. All right, guys, welcome back. So the next game, Leicester City versus Stoke. Leicester City on this roll right now with Shakespeare manager.
All week.
Which one?
Right.
The Ndidi strike.
All right. It's a hell of a strike, but as a forward myself, Jamie Vardy's goal is just brilliant. Absolute brilliant.
Glenn Johnson just asleep.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Right, it's like, it's one of those where defenders played into it a bit, but I think that goal shows you how far they've come in the past 6 weeks. Just because Vardy wasn't having that space. They didn't have that dynamic, those crosses coming in and stuff like that. And yeah, so Craig Shakespeare joins. I think there's only like three other managers that have won their first ever four games, Premier League games, being manager. So he joins that club. I thought Gray played really well for Leicester. It's kind of their, you know, I think him and Kasper Schmeichel have been their two best players this year. But yeah, the Ndidi strike, I mean, just unstoppable.
It looked like something you'd see in FIFA, like the video game. Yeah. Where it was just traveling up the whole time. It was a perfect strike.
Yeah,
just outside the box as well. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Great strike.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, if you're Leicester, I mean, are you vindicated now on firing Ranieri? Sure seems like
that. How weird is that? Like, it was a month ago, or whatever it was, 5 weeks ago.
We've almost forgotten about it.
And it's kind of all forgotten. Like, Leicester fans are happy again. They're going to stay up. Yeah, they're on this great roll.
Ranieri made his first comments, like, really since then. And his only real comment that came out was, I was just really surprised. And I'm thinking, I'm like, how are you surprised when you're playing as poorly as you are at that point? Like, how much of a grace period do you think you have? I mean, we're fans of the game. We're not literally in the locker room or any of that, but you know, we can sense that something's not right. Something wasn't right.
I think the great thing is, especially for Ranieri, is that Leicester are going to stay up. Okay, so he's still going to have that legendary status at the club now. If they'd have went down, everybody would have blamed Ranieri. Did it? It taints what he did for that club last year, right? So it's great that they're going to stay up, and it's just for him, really. I'm glad they're going to stay up because it kind of will solidify what he did for them, and obviously he'll be able to go back to that club maybe in a year or two for whatever reason, just to be in the stands or whatever. And
yeah, but
I think
all these wins in a row now, Leicester are 13th. You know, before they were in the drop zone. I mean,
yeah,
it's an amazing run that they've gone on. I mean, they're clearly, I mean, at this point, they're, most people say,
well, it just shows how tight it is at the bottom of the table. You know, you go on 2-3-game winning streak, and next thing you know, you're almost halfway up the table.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah.
If they had one more point, they'd be literally 10th.
Wow. All right, guys, so moving along, KCOM Stadium, Hull versus West Ham.
It's a really great.
Tell you what, Andy Carroll's goal. What great control he had.
That is good.
I wish he could stay fit more. I've always, you know, he was a great player at Newcastle. Don't think he really took his chances and didn't get much of a chance at Liverpool. And, you know, now he's at West Ham. But I've always thought that he should be touted to get some more playing time for England.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know what, if he can have at least get through this season consistently and keep scoring, keep doing what he's doing, I don't think there's any reason why you wouldn't get called up. Maybe
as a specialist, you know, someone like an Eric Crouch back in the day, where you put him on the last 10 minutes or something like that.
Big Pete, yeah, throw him on.
Patrick Crouch, sorry. Not
yeah. Crouch. So, and then you add what was it? Robertson, the young left back, scored.
What a run!
Yeah.
What a run!
And how calm. That's his first Premier League goal. He was like cool as a cucumber, sliding that in the bottom corner.
Completely unmarked. Just comes right through the middle of everyone.
Well, yeah, it's because he's the central back. But it's another team that's running three at the back. I mean, that's the new in vogue formation. I mean, not necessarily it's the 3-4-3, but three at the back. I mean, even England played it in against Germany. So it seems as though, you know what, it was started by Juventus, probably like, you know, a few years ago, not as though anyone's ever done it before then.
But yeah.
It's become a very popular formation, and even Everton played that formation against Liverpool, and I think it just goes to show, it's like, just because you play it through the back doesn't guarantee you anything.
No.
You've got to have the right players.
But then you add, who's the other defender? Ranocchia scored a winner, 5 minutes to go, great time to score for them, and a great turnaround for Hull. I mean, if you wanted to see some fight for from a team down in the mire, if you like. That was huge. So fair play to them. Great result. And Snodgrass had his chance in the second half to get his return goal, but unfortunately kind of scuffed his lines a little bit.
Well, he got mocked by it. There are some pictures that came out, some fans pointing at him. And
of course. I mean, right? Isn't that what it's all about?
Yeah, I guess so.
It's the theatrics.
But I mean, like in every game where generally if a player leaves a club, whether on good terms or bad terms, when they come back, they're going to get booed. There's going to be things said. There's going to be chants. That's almost guaranteed, right? That's part of English football.
Not always. I mean, Rio Ferdinand can buy.
No, I think it, you know, I think what happens is when a certain club, you're right, mate. When a certain club knows that you've reached the end and they kind of know too, and then they go nicely to somewhere else, like Darren Fletcher coming back to.
Yeah, well, that's a little thing. Yeah, when you basically you're no longer good enough for the club.
Yeah,
that's one thing where you've kind of worn out your welcome in a way. But like this is a player at the top of his game.
29 though, isn't he? He's not young. I think that's what I'm getting at. Like he's still so. And then,
but he's
okay. But
he's
and that's the thing as well. Hull have got to kind of understand. I agree with you, right? Because Hull have got to understand. Hang on a minute. We just got paid. Hull City just got paid $10 million for a 29-year-old. Guy with a sweet left foot.
Which no one really even knew who he was. Like 2 years
so, I mean,
ago
you
like
take that money, you bring in a couple, they bought in a couple of players, they probably still got some money in the bank from it as well. I mean, yeah, it's just the way it is. So I like it because I think I think with the Snodgrass one, it's probably a little bit more just ribbing because they know they can. Finally, we've got this chance to. A player's gone, we got some money, but we can rib him. Like,
and
that doesn't come around every day for a whole city, right?
And you beat them. So.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So it's like, did you leave to go to the better squad or
yeah,
not?
Yeah.
That said, will Hull stay up this year? That's, you know, they're 18th right now. They're in the drop zone. You know, anything can happen, obviously, but, you know.
Showing some fun. They're giving themselves a chance as well. Like, Sunderland are showing no chance. Middlesbrough are showing no chance. Hull are showing something.
They
you know
are,
what I mean?
And they have been ever since about December when they made the change.
Right. Well, moving on. Chelsea versus Crystal Palace. What happened in this game?
Victor Moses happened. His injury changed the formation. They went from a 3-4-3 to a 3-5-2, and it just unbalanced the whole side.
Yeah, they tried to.
They put Pedro.
I've been saying all year that he's probably their most underrated, probably most important player in that system.
Yeah. Yeah, trying to play Pedro in there.
And Pedro was responsible for the first goal. He tried to clear it out.
Yeah.
Not the first goal for Chelsea, obviously, but the first goal for Crystal Palace. He tried to clear it out. It went right to the center of the park. He was trying to get it to Matic. And it just was a little too far, and then it just it broke the wrong way if you're a Chelsea fan, and bam, their goal right there. I mean, it was an amazing first 10, 11 minutes or so. It was crazy start to the game.
But both Wilf Zaha and Benteke had both scored on the international break last week. I only found out yesterday that Wilf Zaha decided not to play for England.
Yeah, he played for Cameroon or something.
Ivory Coast,
that's what it was, yeah.
Scored, Benteke scored.
Which was actually a big controversy in England.
Yeah. Yeah, because Gareth Southgate came out and said he just didn't show enough passion for playing for England. He's got bags of ability, bags of potential, but at some point you've got to show that potential, haven't you? You've got to show at least an attitude to where you're going to knuckle down and not think you know everything and you're this first-class professional.
I'm just upset because I decided to watch your all's game instead of this game. I actually originally turned on the Palace-Chelsea game, then I was like, oh, I'll see if West Brom can pull whatever on you.
The funniest thing about this game is that the ref indicated like 7 minutes of stoppage time, and then they ended up playing like at nearly 11 minutes. It went to like 101.
Diego Costa had a number of chances in the second half, some of which were great saves, others of which were just, he just missed the shot completely. Chelsea had their chances.
Oh, this was, look, fair play to Palace, defended like absolute like champions. Oh, even Sacco, who came from Liverpool, was absolutely brilliant. Just threw himself at everything, blocked everything.
But Sacco was pretty good for Liverpool. What really got him out of there was the drugs.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
But, yeah, don't get me wrong. This, if I think if you look up the stats, I would go as far as saying this was probably in the 70s for possession.
73%.
Okay, for Chelsea. Absolutely dominated. Just two really well-taken goals. That Benteke, composure, little chip over Courtois.
But that was kind of lucky. That was like a deflection in the midfield that then took it to Zaha, who then just threaded it across.
Stuck it back.
But it was...
He got caught under his feet a little bit. I was worried. Finish, and it was, you know, to have that composure just to be like, okay, I'm not going to panic. Yeah, so fair play to Palace. That's four on the spin for Palace, isn't it? Four wins on the trot. And I was touting them to go down under Big Sam, but Big Sam again, proven.
Only three in a row, but yeah, nonetheless.
I think it's four.
Oh, four, yeah, with this one. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, Jeff.
Unbelievable, Jeff. All right, guys, don't forget you're tuning in to Blokes on the Bench here on 94.7 WPVC. You can get in contact with us 4342 849 470, or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/blokesonthebench. All right, so what was the next game? It's good. Oh, Burnley versus Spurs.
Hand it over, innit?
Go on, Alex.
Take it away, bud.
Wow. So, Burnley, we haven't won in Burnley in a few seasons, actually. I think we've for Tottenham, they've only won there just a half dozen times or something like that. They've obviously, they're a tough place to play for us for whatever reason. They, you know, for the first hour, it was pretty much a stalemate. And, it was one of those games that I feel like a few years ago, under maybe another manager with different players, we would have either lost or drawn. But the players showed a lot of fight in this game. And, hey, I was ecstatic when Dyer got the goal, which was well taken for a defenseman off the corner. It kind of came to him out of nowhere, and he just took a step back and took his time. He didn't, like, thrash it in or anything like that. He picked his spot, and... It was a good first goal, and then Dele Alli made up for his he really just totally missed one in the first half that he should have had. He made up for that with a great pass across the face of the goal to Son to really put it out of reach for Burnley. Overall, Tottenham looked, they were the better squad over the course of the game, and they really started to turn the screw in the second half. But credit to Burnley, and the scoreline doesn't really show it, but Burnley put up a big fight right there. And, you know, it's weird because... Every single time it seems like Burnley comes to Spurs, we beat them 4-0. We've done that last couple seasons. But when we go to their place, it's a tough spot. It's one of the more difficult places to play, at least for us and maybe not for others. But.
No, I mean, that's... Look, I think we said a couple of weeks ago, Burnley, away from home this year...
They're horrible.
...have two draws. That's it.
And then,
so all their points that they accumulate are at home. That really... You don't want to go to
like
Turf
30
more.
Points or something that they've accumulated at home.
Yeah. Brilliant stat. So that's again, that's something that makes this a huge win, in my opinion, for Tottenham. Especially when, you know, in a game like this, I guarantee the message would be patient, but let's get a goal in the first half. Let's get 1-0 up at halftime. And, you know, you'd start drifting into the 65-minute mark and you still haven't scored. It was a great time for them to score. Like you said, great, tidy little finish from Dyer.
I feel like this would have been a tougher game to play for Spurs, not necessarily at home, but if the scoreline wasn't what it was at the end, sometimes at White Hart Lane, the fans start to just, they kind of like, oh no, not again. And there's that kind of groan that kind of comes across after every missed shot or misplaced ball. It was almost better being on the road where you can kind of isolate that. Even after the Dele Alli miss, the away fans, the Tottenham fans, they started singing the classic Dele Alli song that, you know,
well,
if you're an Arsenal fan, it rings true.
Well,
he says he's better than Ozil.
Well, yeah, any grandma's
he
better than Ozil.
Only five mil, and he's better than Ozil. Is how
grandma's been dead for 15 years, still does more than Ozil. But yeah, so here's the question then: so 7 points behind, Chelsea go and have to play Man City midweek. Chelsea still have to play United. Mourinho, you know, Mourinho is going to want to turn the screw on Chelsea. You think the race is
it back on?
I think the judgment is made at 10 o'clock Wednesday night.
You'll know. Yeah.
If Chelsea get a result, I think it's over.
I think even a result doesn't necessarily guarantee. I think they need the win.
Look, of course they need the win, because the problem is, and I said this before the show, is that when you get down to like 10 games to go. And somebody says, and everyone's talking about it, you win seven games, the title's yours, yeah? It's very hard to chalk those seven wins off when that's in the back. Instead of just doing your process that you've done all season.
Everyone's fighting for everything now.
Everyone's fighting for everything. So you're going down the bottom and you're playing, let's say, Hull City. I'm not sure if they start to play Hull, but let's say they have to go to Hull on a Wednesday night in the next month and a half.
In the rain, probably.
Yeah. Like, and Hull need the 3 points. Like, you know what I mean? These are situations you don't want to be in. And I think it's massive. They lost yesterday is massive because their next game, they would be hoping for a Sunderland at home where they know they're going to wrap in four goals and it's going to be job done, yeah? But it's not. They got to play Man City. I don't care if it's at the Etihad or Stamford Bridge. I don't know where it's at. But I'm saying that is not the game you want to go into when people are telling you need seven games to win and you, okay, first one up and you lose to Palace. Can you imagine if they lose to Man City? Then every game starts to look a little bit impossible. And I don't care where you go, even Stoke.
It is at home for Chelsea.
Okay. But they were at home yesterday, you know? So, yeah, the fans are going to be up for it, but the players are going to be nervous. They will, especially if they don't score in the first 25 minutes or it's 0-0 at halftime.
And we'll get to it. Man City looked pretty good today.
Looked pretty good.
So this was an interesting game, Ryan, this next one. It's St. Mary's Stadium, Southampton versus Bournemouth.
This is one I didn't watch live, and I thought, well, you know what, I actually saw the flash up on Sky Sports News was misses a penalty, and it's an absolute humdinger, so I had to watch it. So I ended up watching the highlights of this whole game. This is one of the best 0-0 draws.
There were so many
all
chances.
Season. Yeah, end to end, did it. Tackles flying in.
Great
it was
saves.
So open.
Yep.
Great saves. And then Arthur's penalty. He must blaze it literally about 40 yards over the bar. I'm not sure if it stayed in St. Mary's, but it would have been close to hitting the Raptors. But yeah, and when you watch it in the replay, he is standing leg, his left foot kind of slides underneath him. It creates a divot that pops the ball in the air, and he just blazes it over the bar.
Harry Kane had one
and
of those earlier.
And identical at the same end, the same penalty spot, and did exactly the same thing. So I think they put it best on Match of the Day, where that groundsman's not winning any.
So wait, it was in the same ground?
Yeah, same penalty spot at Southampton. And he said that, you know, that groundsman's not winning any awards this year for things. So that was kind of funny.
It wasn't just purely the ground there. It was, he looked like he just stepped in the complete wrong spot, I thought. It was a combination of both. But yeah, I mean,
it's once your foot starts sliding, just ask John Terry, 2008 Champions League final. Just ask John Terry, when your foot starts sliding, you can't score, can you, mate? But anyway.
All right, guys, the time is now 20:07. We'll be right back. All right, guys. So any more about that game, Ryan, the Southampton?
No, not really.
All right. Let's move on. Swansea versus Middlesbrough, another draw. And, like, both goalkeepers, I think, had a great game.
Yeah. It was good.
There were a number of good goalkeeping performances in over the weekend. Not just in this game, but really in a lot of games.
Yeah, unfortunately, Ben Foster was one of them, but never mind. But yeah, actually, Middlesbrough actually kind of looked scrappy, like looked up for the fight. Again, they just got nothing really going forward. And unfortunately, goals win games, and they're just not going to get out of it. Too many nil-nils, not enough goals. Okay, they're not shipping any, but the 1 point at this stage of the season with 8-9 to go ain't going to get the job done.
Not for Middlesbrough now.
No. Just want to give a shout out. My man Bastian Schweinsteiger scored on his debut today for Chicago Fire. 17 minutes in. Boom. Bassy, get in there, mate.
What do you make of all these players going over to the States?
That's all right, isn't it? I think his missus lives out there. She's a tennis player, isn't she? Can't think of what her name is now. I think she's retired now, like maybe 5 years ago. Pretty decent. I think she's Wimbledon champion anyway. Yeah. Open champion.
What about the fact that these players from Europe come over to the U.S.? A lot of them are, I mean, hey, Schweinsteiger couldn't even get into the squad. And now he comes into the MLS and he's scoring on his debut. And what's your evaluation of that? Obviously, MLS is not up to the level of the top five leagues in Europe. I mean, right?
No, it's not.
I do have a little clip here.
I think most. I don't want to be a sound thing, but yeah, when you start attracting, when you start attracting the older European players, like Pirlo, Villa, and that. It's more of a, it's almost like MLS is turning into like a marketing business rather than wanting to progress and do something. Because when your best, when arguably your best young talent plays for Borussia Dortmund, like in Europe, to me that kind of says a lot. Where it wouldn't, surely, yeah, like someone like New York, yeah, surely they would, they should pay a lot of money for this kid to come and Pulisic, right?
Pulisic,
yeah. Pay him, pay whatever you want, kid. Come shine for us, win us the MLS, da-da-da-da-da. Is he still going to get in the US squad, right? Because that should be his aim. But when your talented kids like that are, like, waving as they get on the boat...
Is that actually the best thing for his career? Are you going to develop as fast if you're in the MLS or as if you're in a top
I think that's my point. Like what your goals are as a footballer. Like, when you have these kids... like in the school playground playing and they want to be, they don't want to be, they're American kids, yeah, little kids. My kid doesn't turn around to me and go, Daddy, I want to be the next, like, Landon Donovan.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
what does your kid say?
Well,
I want to be the next
Rooney. She's female and nearly four, so she, you know, she wants to be Zebrahimovic, as she loves to call it. But, you know, they want to be Messi, Ronaldo, like, do you know what I mean? Right. So I get it. Like, the kids have got to go over. But what does that say about the MLS is kind of my point.
I mean, the MLS has a few years under their belt, but it's the whole point of the league. It's, we're in the U.S., of course. They're doing it for profit. Everything's right. For profit, yeah. Right? So it's almost like a situation like, sorry, Mark, like Arsenal, where you're not necessarily going to maximize your spending potential, and you're gonna go for profit, right?
At the end of the day, U.S. soccer has come a long way, right?
No doubt. Since,
but it has got a long way to go. In the fact, I've got a clip here I want to play. All right? It's just a gentle rib, but it's like U.S. soccer fans chanting the same chant as the English fans. Take a guess as to where...
At a game. Which one's which?
Okay. Ready?
Here we go.
Yeah, I think we can tell the difference there as to which one's which.
Yeah, the only defense I would say there is that obviously more people in the ground at the British one. Not only that, genuinely, the way we talk, we sound a little bit more angry and annoyed with life in general.
But if you actually watch some of the games, say like the Sounders, they've got a pretty good, they've got a really good fan base.
I've got friends that live out that way that say that it feels much more like a sort of Premier League
game. And actually, it's harder to get a ticket to go to a Sounders game than it is for, like, the Seahawks, is what I've heard as well.
Which is the team that cut the log after they score?
That's the Timbers.
Oh. Wow. Fantastic. Can you imagine doing that in England? You'd get kicked out of you.
Doesn't Arsenal fire a cannon or something like that?
Huh?
Doesn't Arsenal fire a cannon or something like that?
I haven't heard it go off this year.
All right, guys. So, well, actually, the next game, Arsenal versus Man City. Pass it over to Mark.
Take it over, mate.
Marky Mark.
Therapy session.
This is going to feel less like a therapy session than in previous weeks. At least we pulled out a draw.
Yes!
You know, it was touted as a must-win game for both sides.
We got a draw.
But defending was shocking in this game for Arsenal. You know, I feel like we had a little bit more fight in us than in the previous games, which was nice to see. The last couple of games, we seem like we've kind of just laid over and let the other teams walk on top of us.
It's the polite way of putting it.
Yeah. The Walcott goal was lucky.
It was poor defending by City more than anything else.
I mean, honestly, the defending in this game overall, like, that's why it was such an exciting game, because there wasn't much defending going on both sides, I would say. So, De Bruyne hit the post twice. I'll let Greggy delve into this one.
So I said to you outside, mate, first 10 minutes of a big game like this, I've never seen so much space in a back four, in Arsenal's back four, in my entire life. Absolutely shambolic.
Eggers.
Just the worst. It should have been about 4-0 after like 8 minutes. It was just ridiculous. And it's like,
but it was both teams. It was back and forth, if you were watching, right? It was back and forth, back and forth. And that's probably why there was so much space.
Yeah, but...
but the inevitable happened in the fifth minute. Someone was going to score.
Man City, even though their defending maybe wasn't great. Okay, Clichy gets caught ball watching more than any other player in the league, right? But,
well, where did he come from?
Yeah, I know, right? That you taught him everything he knows. So, but the, my issue is, if you watch the first 10 minutes of this game, you have, I can't, obviously you can't see what I'm doing here, but you have your two centre backs standing like this, and the pitch is going this way, lads.
So essentially they're not side by side.
No, they're almost one in front of the other, and just acres, just ridiculous.
Well, in the first goal that Sané scored, like, Mustafi comes into the opposing half to, like, try to head a ball away.
Which he
like,
did. Shocking. And then De Bruyne had an amazing pass forward to really just unleash Sané up the field. And, hey, it was a great goal.
Good finish, yeah. You don't take any away from, I don't take anything away from the finish. It's just there's so many schoolboy errors that lead up to those, that initial pass should never happen. And they don't, well, Bellerin, they're a team that don't know how to cut that out, and they never have.
Bellerin should have come inside when Mustafi went so far forward. Bellerin should have pulled inside to compensate.
I mean, Bellerin's probably as surprised as everyone else is with Mustafi running 30 yards up the pitch to try to head the ball away. It was ridiculous.
Bellerin's turning into a ball watcher as well. I've noticed that over the past 3 weeks.
He'll be ball watching at Barcelona next year, is what they're saying.
Probably. But for me, Mustafi, everyone, like the headline on Sky Sports News, like, Mustafi rescues Arsenal. No, he didn't. He threw him down there. You watch the second goal. If I was a manager or I was a player on the pitch, I probably would have walked up to Mustafi and punched him in the face.
How
on the second goal.
How on earth did he not?
Just slide in. Like he jumped out the way.
Out of the way of the ball.
It's not even a great, like, if you watch it, Aguero, he almost scuffs it off his other foot and it trickles in. Mustafi, I'm like, okay, he's going to slide. Oh, he still hasn't slid yet. What's he? Oh, now he's jumped out of the way. Well, that is first-class defending. How much did we pay for him? Brilliant. Well done. Just absolute shambolic.
So you could say Mustafi was responsible for both City goals.
Second one, definite.
The second one as well.
Yeah, okay, give him the first. But the second one, what are you doing? Just slide in. At least in the first one, because Shawnee knows he has no chance of sliding to clear that up a line.
Anyway.
But he dives. And he takes off the ground. I'm watching it right now in your little replay. Look at this. Off the ground, give it something, misses it. No, nothing wrong with that whatsoever. I don't know if this is coming up now. But it doesn't even move like Mustafi. It's just ridiculous. Okay, he scores a great header. Off the turf, bit of a skip past Caballero. Gets the point for him. But in my opinion...
The key play, I think, was the response that City had after Walcott scored. It seemed as though the ground was
finally behind the team.
Yes, it was like, yes, you could sense everything. The chants were getting louder. The whole team was getting really just pushed to another level. And then all of a sudden, there were a couple of really bad plays, one of which was by Alexis Sanchez, where he kind of goes up. He's on a breakaway of sorts, and he doesn't pass it out to the left. And then there's a somewhat of a semi-counter that happens. In the end, Ozil gets the ball. And Ozil just ends up kicking it right into the Man City player, and which it ends up just creating the whole goal itself. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Did Ozil have a touch today?
Well, it looked as though he was playing for Man City with those kind of touches.
Yeah. I think he took maybe three corners. That's what I remember. Way to go to win that 200K. Well done. Just rubbish. And
he did get an assist.
We come back to the... Oh, come on, don't give me that. Rubbish. It's just the most overrated attacking midfielder I've ever seen in my life. Shocking. Oh my God. I wouldn't pay £2.50 to have him in my Sunday league team. Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. But
he is a World Cup winner.
Oh, my... Yeah, and you know what? I can't think of what his name is now. Jonathan Green is a Champions League winner. For Man United. Jonathan Green. You know who that is? No, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, but was 99. He starting at the time? No. Ozil was starting for Germany when they won.
Still.
Hey, I mean, look, Ozel has had a lot of people that are criticizing him this year. This is probably his worst year in a long time.
Never rated him.
I think that Ozel, he should be better, right? I mean, I think that the criticism is fair of him. He should be better.
Doesn't show up for a big game. That's the problem, right? You put this price tag, 45, you're buying for $45 million. He's a World Cup winner, all this, yeah? Show up for a big game. This is a big game. Show up. No touches. Chelsea, big game, didn't show up. On and on and on. Okay, when the games get a little bit scrappy like they do in England, show up for the game. Disappears. He's like reading the newspaper in the first row.
He would be a great player in Italy, I would think. You know, where there's...
No.
My dad would be a good player.
It's not more physical.
No, it's not. It's slower. Not. It's at least space. 3 yards too slow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would be brilliant because he'd have so much time on the ball and they could pick out these little fancy fairy passes.
Same thing in Spain if he didn't play for, one of the top two squads, you know?
Rubbish. He ain't a Premier League player. He's rubbish. That's all I got. But anyway, Clichy's defending was shocking as well for City. But, you know, 2-2.
Well, Wenger always said, you know, City are good clients of ours.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, so maybe that's true, maybe it isn't. But, okay, let's talk about where they are in the table right now. So City are, you know, this was basically the best result for anyone that's not an Arsenal or a City fan. That's what I said.
Everyone in the top.
If you're everyone else, you're happy
teams,
with this. If you're one of those squads, you're not happy. Man City are now, they're in the top four. Mm-hmm. They have a game in hand against Liverpool, but basically on par with everyone else. Man City looks like the top four is theirs to lose, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, United have to really fight for it to get there. I mean, granted, there's plenty of games to play, but United are 5 points back with game in hand. Arsenal, 51 points, 7 points back of...
How far? We're not that far behind Liverpool, though, are we? We're only 6 points behind Liverpool, we should be, with two games in hand on Liverpool.
Yes, against Liverpool, yes.
Okay, so that puts us in there. Our goal difference is terrible, so that's another point. But yeah, I mean, we're still there. That's why it's so frustrating being a United fan and getting these meaningless draws. Because I feel like we should have third place locked up by now, but apparently we just can't.
What's your biggest win of the season? How come you don't have a bigger goal differential?
Because we like a lot of nil-nils, mate.
Because Mourinho.
We like a lot of 1-1s against, like, Bournemouth.
You have the same goal differential as Everton. Plus 19.
I feel like Everton have been banging them in as well, which is crazy.
All right, guys, let's get to the table. So Chelsea are sitting on 69 points. Tottenham, 62. Liverpool, 59. Man City, 58. Man United, 53. Arsenal sitting in 51. Everton, 50. West Brom, 44. Stoke, 36. Southampton, 34. And then bottom three, Hull in 27. Middlesbrough in 23. And then sitting in 20. Sunderland. No, you don't think Sunderland are ever going to...
No chance.
They're outright.
No chance.
They look horrible. They deserve
shocking,
to go down.
Shocking. Shocking.
They would need, another coaching change to really turn things around. Is the only way it could possibly change things, and that's just not going to happen.
They would need probably four of the bottom six teams to come down with, like, mass food poisoning and not be able to play any games for the rest of the year and have to play the reserves or something for them to have any chance. Just rubbish.
Yeah, they're 8 points back of really of safety, essentially. Because they have 20 and Swansea have 28. So that's a lot of points with
eight to go.
Eight to go, yeah.
And they don't fill you with any confidence either, do they? They're not showing anything at the moment that makes you think they could go on a four-game run.
Right.
They're doing the opposite. They're doing a four-game run the other way.
Yeah, no, they lost the previous five, right? Five losses on the trot now. Just trash.
All right, well, then let's get to the fixtures because we do have a busy week. So Tuesday, the 4th, Burnley versus Stoke.
Nil, yeah.
Leicester versus Sunderland.
Leicester 4-0.
Watford versus West Brom.
1-1.
Man United versus Everton.
0-0.
Wow.
Arsenal versus...
Realist, mate.
No faith. Wow, seriously. If there's another 0-0, like, there's going to be a revolt. I mean, come on.
He's not making the United fans any happier, are you?
Can't get any worse.
Are you a City fan or a United fan?
There you go. Easy now.
Wednesday, we have Arsenal versus West Ham.
I'm going West Ham. West Ham need to win.
So do Arsenal.
Come on.
I don't think, Mark. Say something. I would think Arsenal would win that.
Say something, Mark. He's just sitting there going, oh.
I'm going Andy Carroll, too.
Like, my predictions on this club at this point in time, like, are completely irrelevant. I mean, that's just the point it's got.
Do you feel like you're a jinx? If you were to say a win, do you feel like they'd do the opposite? Is that what you're saying?
It has nothing to do with that. It just has to do with the fact that this team is so unpredictable and everything. You know, you got banger out banners at WrestleMania. Like,
yeah, I'm going for a 2-0 win to West Ham. And when the second goal goes in the 35th minute at halftime, I'm predicting a Wenger out parachute jump into the stadium. That's my prediction.
Like Lady Gaga, like Super Bowl halftime show, like dropping in.
Yeah.
I think Arsenal will win that game.
I think.
Hull versus Middlesbrough.
Hull.
Oh.
1-0.
That's a
6-pointer if ever there's been one.
Southampton versus Crystal Palace.
2-2.
Swansea versus Spurs.
Spurs. I think it would be Spurs, but it would be 1-0.
Yeah,
is it in Wales or is it in London?
It's in Wales.
Okay.
Chelsea versus Man City.
Chelsea Man City. This is the one I wanted to hear about. Really think about it. At Stamford Bridge, Chelsea versus Man City.
I'm saying 1-1.
Mark?
I think Chelsea wins.
3-1, Manchester City.
Hopefully. Liverpool versus Bournemouth.
Ryan's already called his bookie, by the way.
Yeah, those bets have been on for at least a week.
This is one crazy parlay right here.
Liverpool versus Bournemouth.
Liverpool's got to run away with this. I would say like 3-1, 4-1, something like that.
Okay, Bournemouth, 3-1.
And no comeback from Liverpool this time.
All right, it's at Anfield, right?
It is.
Yes, it is.
3-1 Bournemouth.
All right, so then we move to Saturday. Spurs versus Watford.
I mean, just because Troy Deeney plays for the opposing team doesn't mean they're going to win. Spurs, 3-1.
Oh, Troy Deeney.
I'll go 2-0 Spurs.
Man City versus Hull.
I've got a sneaky feeling this might be a draw, 1-1. I think this could be a huge result for Hull.
So you say
City.
Man City rolls over Chelsea.
Yep.
And then draws with Burnley.
And then Burnley comes to town and they just...
No, you said Hull City.
Hull, sorry. Yeah. And then Hull comes. Come on. Okay, if they beat
Chelsea... You want a cheeky $10?
What's
my hand's out for a shit.
What's the wager?
I'm saying that Hull 1-1.
All right.
Middlesbrough versus Burnley.
Witness.
Middlesbrough, Burnley. Got to go Burnley, haven't you? Even though it's away from home. That might be Burnley's first away win.
Yeah, I think Middlesbrough actually win that one.
Stoke versus Liverpool?
Liverpool are going to run wild. And granted, it isn't Stoke, actually. I retract that statement.
Sunderland versus Man United.
Man United 1-0.
Everton versus Leicester.
Ooh, 2-2.
And then next Monday, Crystal Palace versus Arsenal.
Palace 6.
Oh, so you're not on this one.
You know what? I actually think this will be a draw. Monday night football, Arsenal, not notoriously good Monday night. I'll go 1-1.
Where's your facts on that?
Look it up, mate.
All right, guys, that's about it for this week. We've got a real busy week of results coming up, so we've got a lot to talk about next Sunday. But for me, Andy, Ryan,
Mark,
and Alex,
we'll see you next week, guys. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Blokes on the Bench with your host, Andy Richardson, on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. Join us again next Sunday at 6 for another edition and feed us back at facebook.com/blokesonthebench.